Hey LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. Immerse yourself in our vibrant fashion scene where exclusive streetwear meets high-end boutiques. Stroll through styles defining our bold, wildly creative city, like the unique finds at Melrose Trading Post, a real LA gem. Explore star-studded experiences on Hollywood Boulevard, behind-the-scenes studio tours, and moments of awe under our legendary blue sky. Picture this. The iconic Griffith Observatory, inspiring directors worldwide. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's the time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This is Frosted Tips with Lance Bass.
An iHeartRadio podcast.
Hello, my little peanuts. It's me, your host, Lance Bass. This is Frosted Tips with me, Lance. I got my co-host, my husband, the love of my life, Mr. Turkey Turchin is with us.
Why, thank you.
Turkey, I'm so sorry you didn't get to do the last two episodes.
I know.
It's very confusing for people out there because you did one episode and then you disappeared. But it's not your fault. You got stuck in Miami.
I did get stuck in Miami with your children. Our children.
Oh, my children?
When they were misbehaving, they were yours.
No, they're good.
I kept them safe and sound.
I really, really missed you because I was very, busy that week, thank goodness. So time did fly. But all I wanted to do was put together all the kids' toys that we got them for Christmas because we, were in Miami most of the time.
It's true.
And so we got them this, play kitchen, which I've been wanting them to have like a little play kitchen because that's what my sister had growing up. They might be a little too young for it, but they'll grow into it.
No, they're going to love it.
Yeah. But I couldn't screw the things in. It's impossible.
Lance has weak hands.
But I stupidly hurt my hand. And the older you get, you get really stupid injuries, right? You sneeze and all of a sudden you break a rib.
Yeah.
I was throwing something off the back because we live on a park. And you're not supposed to throw food off the back, but I was feeding my birds and squirrels. So I had some bird seed and all that. And I didn't see that the fence was really that close to me. So I threw it as hard as I could in the backyard and just slammed my three fingers. Thought I broke them. This was last August and I still cannot bend my fingers. It is so bad. But the doctor said, I don't know, I guess I hurt my nerve endings and it just takes months and months for that to heal. Never heard of that before, but...
So we couldn't put together the play kitchen, but luckily last night
I couldn't twist the screws.
I twisted the screws. It all came together. Everyone, a round of applause.
All right, guys. Well, enough about us because we have a very special guest with us. You are Secret Boy Band Society member number. I got to figure this out because I think we're going to have honorary members, which Turkey, you're honorary member number one. Oh. So we had. Of course, I'm going to be number one because I created the show. Number two went to, who was our first guest? Oh, my God. Oh, JC. JC. Yeah. Then we had Jonathan Knight. And now today we have, I'm not going to say my favorite boy band ever,
best one.
But you're right there, right up there. Alexander James McLean, American singer, songwriter, actor, dancer, and model, is a member of the hugely popular boy band, the Backstreet Boys. Born in West Palm Beach, 1978, McLean became interested in performing at a young age and studied dance while growing up. Ooh. AJ has been with the Backstreet Boys since 1993. Alexander James McLean, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Are you so excited that we named our kid after you?
I am, actually. Because we had talked about that forever ago, that if you guys ever had kids, we had talked about it. Then I threw it out and I planted the seed when we did the MTV Awards.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know,
it's Alexander. It made sense. You know, Alexander's his other name. James is my other name. Boom.
There
Alexander
you go.
James. Family
See?
Name.
It
and
was
more
meant
importantly,
to be.
I know you're basically our child.
Yeah.
Well, I'm quite a few people's child. I could be like a loose godfather. You know, just I'm sure there is a godfather, but
we don't do
actually no
yeah,
there isn't.
Because we're but well, he's Jewish. I'm Baptist, so we don't really do the godfather, godmother thing, but people kind of appoint themselves as it.
Okay, cool. Then I'll just send them in here. I'm
we'll
doing
do
it now.
It.
I'm doing it now. It's
I
happening.
Like the loose godfather. That's
I'm the,
nice.
Yeah, I'm the loose godfather.
Yeah.
I'm the LGF.
Lisa
right
Vanderpump
there.
Appointed herself as God, the fairy. Oh, she's the godmother.
She's
and
the
then
godmother.
Our friend Wendy is the fairy godmother.
Yeah.
She's like a princess.
Well, there you go.
So, you know, we have all kinds of wonderful village people
it.
Around
I
us.
I love it, see?
But let's talk about the more serious part of your career, the modeling part.
Yes.
I want to know your first modeling gig, and was it 1992 Sears catalog? Because I would love to see a little Alexander James in his little suit.
Lance wishes.
No, I did. So I was probably around, I think I'm about 4 years old when I first did my first modeling thing, and it was a runway show for a JCPenney's catalog.
Oh, JCPenney, I chose Sears, damn it.
But I will say this. So this was my very first time knowing what a quick change was, because it was just me and my mom backstage, and I had about 12 different looks. So every time I'd go up, I'd walk the catwalk, come back, quick change. So like midway through the show, again, I'm like 4 or 5 years old. My mom's changing me, and I look up and I saw my first pair of boobs that I had ever seen in my life. And I did not know what to think, didn't know what was going on.
Like adult boobs or like kid boobs?
No, like model boobs,
like
grown woman boobs. And I was just like enamored. And I was just like, my mom's trying to get me dressed. And I'm just like, she's like, what are you looking at? Come on. I'm like,
boobies.
And then I proceeded to walk out holding hands with these models like they were my parents. That was my first ever like modeling thing. I wish I would have been asked, cut to years down the road when our career really kind of started to kind of kick off, 98, 99. We had done a partnership with Versace for like wardrobe for the Millennium Tour. And Kevin had gotten really close with Donatella, and she asked him to do like an actual Versace runway show freaking Milan. I'm like, damn it.
Ooh.
Why does he get to do it and I don't get? But I did. I mean, I was lanky and kind of whatever, squirrely. And
Donatella.
Kev was like in the best shape of his life. And he looked, you know, he had that Tom Cruise, Christian Bale thing going on.
Well, because, tall. He was a handsome. He is a handsome man.
Yeah. For 51. Yeah,
man.
I said it. 51. I don't care. 51.
One, love your mom. I mean, going back to the mid-90s, I remember when I first met you guys, probably in Germany somewhere, your mom was the one that always stood out to me because she was just
She makes herself known.
She was a lovely, lovely woman.
Is.
And just made me feel so comfortable wherever I went. And
she is.
But I just saw her recently.
Where was that?
I'm like, my gosh. Maybe at your show.
Yes, at your
show in Vegas. Oh, yeah. Just waving at us from the other side.
I know.
I was like, oh, there she is.
She is the best.
She just felt like everyone's mom, which was, and especially
so
coming from another group, this is so rare.
She kind of was everyone's mom. I mean, there was a long stretch where we had no management, no anything, and she was kind of helping to steer the ship along with some of our label folks. But she's phenomenal. I mean, single mom, raised me as good as she could. I think I turned out okay. I mean, I'm not great, but
the jury's still out.
Yeah, the jury is definitely still out. Yeah. But now she lives in Vegas. I moved her to Vegas back in 17, and she loves it out there. She loves it. She wanted to get out of Florida as fast as she could, as most of us do, for various reasons.
Of course.
Yeah.
When did y'all move to Orlando? Because you moved there specifically to get an entertainment, right?
Yeah, I moved to Orlando in, I want to say, 91, because I was in South Florida, Boynton Beach, Boca. I was doing a lot of musical theater in Boca at the Royal Palm Dinner Theater, which is now, sadly, a apartment complex. They couldn't keep up. And I still kick myself to this day. At the height of our career, they somebody mentioned to me an offer to buy out the theater. And sadly, that was right at the beginning of my drug and alcohol days. So I just forgot, and it, you know, kind of slept through my fingers, but or slept through my fingers. But now, sadly, it's a freaking apartment complex. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, I moved to like Altamont area in 91, and then moved to the Sand Lake area right down the street from Transcon in 92-ish. Because I actually met Lou in 92. So for me, it's already been 30 years.
Well, I want to know how you, because, you know, you did my documentary, which thank you so much.
Of course.
Boy Band Con was so fun and very eye-opening for me in doing all that research. And for the last few years, we've been working on the scripted version of that, which is going to be coming out next year. Wait till you see who plays Lou. It's going to be great. I can't say the network or anything like that yet. But anyway, the writers did all this heavy research, and I think they used your mom's book a lot for you. And there was a lot of things like, is this true or not? So now that I have you, I want to know. So in the script, they have you in Orlando meeting Howie D at a Latin festival.
Yep.
Okay, so that was true.
That is true.
And you were into, you were a puppeteer.
I did a little bit of everything. You know, this was a 45-minute one-man show that my mom and I put together for me, showing pretty much whatever I could do.
Singing, dancing,
magic, puppeteering, you name it. I did all of it.
You're like the original Miranda Sings.
I was just about to say that.
hey, guys.
And... yeah, so Howie at the time had a partner, Jen, who was his girlfriend at the time, actually. They were a duo. I was performing outside. He was performing inside. And first place was $1,000. And I won. So my first time actually meeting Howie, I beat him, which was awesome. And then I would see him a lot at auditions throughout Orlando, whether it was at Disney or Nickelodeon, because Nickelodeon was massive back then. And then Nick started popping up, which made no sense because they would, you know, call me and say, okay, we're looking for a young Latin boy. And then I show up and it's like a bunch of you. And I'm like, what? Just this doesn't make any sense. Like,
strangely handsome young men.
Yeah. Yes. Blonde hair, blue eyed. And I'm like, how do I fit in here at all? It doesn't make any sense to me. So I never got any of the parts. And then Nick and I actually made it to... Nick went further than I did to the Mickey Mouse Club. He actually got an offer, and I was like runner-up for whatever that season would have been.
Oh, I didn't know that y'all even auditioned for Mickey Mouse Club.
I feel like every single person our age auditioned for Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah,
we both auditioned, and then Nick got an offer. I think it was for like $50,000, and his mom basically said, and right at that same time, he got the audition for... us and picked. So his mom is like, at 12 years old, okay, you decide. Do you want to take a chance on this group that may go nowhere, or do you want to take the deal that's on the table and go be in the... And that would have been, if I'm right, that would have been the season that was Justin, JC, everybody. So who knows what group he would have ended up in if that had gone that
way. Those little choices, you know, that butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Like, who knows what would have happened.
Big ass choice to make at 12
years
old.
And if he would have chosen that, we probably wouldn't be around. I mean, it really just would have messed up everything.
It would have
been a good way, bad way.
Whatever. Yeah, it would have been a conundrum for sure. I mean, it definitely... Who knows if I would have been in your group, you would have been in my group, if the group sort of even happened.
Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Yeah.
That's crazy. And then behind the scenes, you know, Lou Pearlman and Transcon's putting this whole thing together. We all know the story. You know, he found out about New Kids on the Block. He's like, why do these kids have a $1 billion business? I want to be in this business. Wanted to create a music group. There was no such thing as a boy band at that time.
Word didn't exist.
No, it just didn't exist. So he's like, I need a group like this. I want a $1 billion business. wanted to put, you know, this group together. And again, this is what my writers, you know, told me. And I'm like, I have no idea. Lou needed money, went to his investors, and just quickly put a group together that I think you were a part of before.
Yeah, so there was a first incantation of Backstreet Boys, which was myself, Howie, and Nick, and two other gentlemen, Sam and Charles. And within like the first week, Charles just wasn't, it just wasn't gelling. And Howie knew Charles, I believe, from college. So we all went to dinner. I went outside to have a cigarette because I didn't want to even see this shit go down. Pardon me saying shit. So we all chose Howie to be the one to break the news to Charles because he knew him say, hey, man, it's just not working out. So after Charles left, we got Kevin. Kevin came from Disney at the time because
Charming, I'm sure.
Yeah, Lou's limo driver at the time was friends with somebody that was friends with Kevin. Kevin was doing Ninja Turtles. He was Prince Eric. He was Sebastian. He was Aladdin, all at Disney. So we got Kevin, and then Sam didn't work out. We were kind of clashing a little bit, and it just didn't gel. So he quit. Now we're down to four. And we were going to go back to the original grouping of guys that had that had done the first audition. Because Howie, they lost his resume. So a year later, he got cast back in the band because his stage name was Tony Dinetti. That's why he got lost in the mix. Lou's casting woman, I can't remember, I think, Gloria Ciccoli. She couldn't find Howie because he wasn't under Howard Duro. He was under Tony Dinetti. So cut to, now we're down to four. Kevin's like, listen, I've got this cousin. He lives in Kentucky. He can sing. I'm pretty sure he can dance. I don't know. And Kevin called up Brian. Literally, he was, I think, a senior or junior in high school at the time. And he got called to the office. What up, cuz? He's like, why are you calling me in the middle of class? He's like, well, you know, it's one da, 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 da. Hey, I'm in this group. You want to maybe come down to Florida, meet the rest of the guys, and see if this is something that you're interested in. So cut to, Brian showed up to the band house. I'm sure you guys saw the band house at least once or twice.
I don't think so.
Maybe you didn't. I don't know. No. We that might have fizzled out before you guys started.
Yeah, because Lou put us in our own band house right across from Universal Studios.
Yeah, we were like in like the Lake Buena Vista area.
Yeah, it's kind we were of right there on Sand Lake Road.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely different. But we, you know, I was the first one to meet Brian. And he showed up in jean shorts, cut off flannel with like the fray. He had a freaking fade. And he's like, hey, y'all, my name's Brian Latre. I'm from Kentucky. I'm Kevin's cousin. I'm like, oh, good God, man. What the hell just walked in the door? And that night, we sat in the garage, which was our little rehearsal space. We had mirrors up and a fake little dance floor. And we picked out the harmonies to It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday by Boyz II Men. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks later, we did Grad Night 93 at SeaWorld. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That was the launch. I mean, that was the birthing. Obviously, our career, we didn't sign with Jive until like 96, 97. But we did the whole high school, middle school tour before that.
Yeah.
The ESM tour.
You had to start it. Yeah, Dr. Phillips High. You had to play like all those little things.
Oh, yeah.
When you got signed to Germany, because it's Munich, Germany, yep. BMG Areola, mm-hmm. What was it like? I've never heard the story of when you first learned that you got signed with a German label. What did you think of? Because when we got signed over in Germany, I didn't even know that was a possibility.
Well, so we got signed at, so the very first one that happened was actually Mercury Records. Mercury Records gave us an offer, and that fell through. And Dave McPherson, who was the head of A&R at Mercury, mm-hmm. moved from Mercury over to Jive.
Yeah. And, which was just beginning maybe at that time?
Yeah, it basically took us with him. Uh-huh. So once we got signed to Jive, then we realized that there was, I guess you can call them like mini labels around the globe. Mm-hmm. And the U.S., we couldn't find a pot to piss in. Like nobody mm-hmm. really cared. Yep. But Germany, Austria, Switzerland loved us. Mm-hmm. So hence the German label, hence us starting and focusing on those territories for the better part of almost like 2 years.
Yeah. Were y'all overnight sensations there?
So we did this thing called the Pop Explosion in Nuremberg, and it was us and EYC were the only two American acts on the bill. And our single at the time was We Got It Going On. It had taken off on like RTL and all the different radio stations throughout Europe. And people knew our song. Like, it was crazy. We're in our red, white, and blue American outfits. And you know, we'd fly back to Orlando, and we used to call it No Fan Land. Like, we'd get back to the airport, and you could hear a pin drop. Uh-huh. And it was like, dang, this sucks, man. You know, but
and Lance
but we were loved.
The,
in other
Lance
places.
Says the exact same story. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like,
but
verbatim.
Then Spice Girls came out, and Hanson. Because in the States, it was grunge and rap. That's all radio was playing was Nirvana, Dre, Snoop. There was no room for us. And then Hanson came out with M-Bop, Spice Girls, Wannabe. Now pop radio is like, oh, what is this? And it opened the doors. Then we come back, and now there's fans starting to show up. And things started happening. And it was like, whoa, where was the shift? And then it got to the point where we couldn't even, like... We couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't do anything. Yeah. You know, I used to frequent the Florida Mall until I couldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I got chased down by a tour group of Brazilian girls. It was great.
I know. And the only thing we can compare that to was Beatles, New Kids, if you ever like went to their
New
concert.
Kid, absolutely.
Hey, L.A., Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels.
From epic shopping to nonstop pride events, DiscoverLA.com is your gateway to everything L.A. From walk-up windows and rooftop bars to year-round alfresco dining, Los Angeles is a culinary thrill ride sure to leave visitors hungry for more. From tacos to sushi, we truly have some of the best restaurants. After you get a bite to eat, get a taste for fame firsthand by attending a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard or a glimpse behind the scenes at world-famous studio tour. Stop and see a movie at the iconic El Capitan Theater and check out the stairs outside the Dolby Theater where all the stars walk before the Oscars. Take a hike at glamorous Griffith or stop for a boba or a draft cold brew at an outdoor cafe perfect for people watching. There are endless amounts of outdoor activities in L.A. with our beautiful weather. And, of course, Pride is celebrated every day in Los Angeles. Everyone is welcome to experience our sparkling nightlife, indulgent spas, and sensational shopping. Plan your weekend at DiscoverLA.com. It's time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com. Shop now on tomboyx.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You were, how old were you when, like 18?
Probably like, yeah, like probably like 17, 18 mm-hmm. when like it really shifted. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that affected you in any way just to have all that love coming your way? And I mean, girls chasing you everywhere. It's just something I mean, no one can really compare.
No, it's, you don't, you know, well, cause I had a lot of, I personally had a lot of haters.
Really?
Why? Amongst like, you know, I only went to high school my freshman year. And then I dipped out and I got tutored because we were traveling everywhere. Yeah. I graduated like a year early when I was 17. But like my chorus teacher at the time, you know, I was so excited and I could share this with him. Like, hey, I'm going to be in this group. It's going to be huge. And he don't get your hopes up. Mm-hmm. Don't get your hopes up. And just kept like beating me down with it. And I just, and you know, my so-called friends, which are not my friends anymore, were all saying the same thing. Like, oh, this isn't going to last. This isn't going to da 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 da. And then, you know, cut to when things took off and I'd run into these people, you know, they loved me. I was their best friend. And I'm like, hey, no, suck it. But yeah, it was a real weird experience to, you know, I'm 45 now and I feel like in the past 4 to 5 years, it's finally started to settle in. Like since there's been this resurgence, since we did our residency, all these things have been happening for the good. It's definitely finally I can really truly appreciate it. When you're 17, 18, you don't know what is up or down. Yeah, all these girls are throwing themselves at you. You're traveling the world. It's great, but it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's extremely overwhelming and it's very time consuming and you didn't have time to just be a kid.
Right. And you're becoming an adult. I mean, I remember I joined in singing at 16, but from Mississippi, that's really like 13.
Right.
We just, you know, we weren't very advanced. But when I joined the group, you know, my four guys were already living life. I mean, on their own. I mean, they were only 19 themselves, but they had been working already for so many years and definitely having relationships, which I really didn't, you know, I was obviously a closeted kid.
Yeah.
So at that age, being kind of just thrown out into the world and having everyone throw themselves at you, were you the type of normal teenager that like, just started dating every single girl?
Oh, I mean, it was all older girls. I mean, I say older, but I was like 17, 18. Mm-hmm. They were like 22. And I was like, oh, that's an older girl. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I definitely had my fun. Yeah. I'm not going to deny that because what guy wouldn't at that age when it was just, well, okay. Yes. Yeah. No, but like I said, everything happened so fast. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of this whirlwind, but really 99 was when it really was kind of when everything kind of went upside down for all of us in a good way. But like Millennium, our biggest album to date, that to me was like this overnight insanity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, TRL was created because of groups like us. Mm-hmm. You know, MTV needed to find a way to retire music videos. Mm-hmm. And they created TRL. You know, they had the top 20 countdown, they had the rock countdown, but they didn't have anything for the NSYNCs, the Backstreets, the Christina, the Britney,
the Fanatics,
you know, the Blink-182s and all of this. That was that era, the Hansons, the Spice Girls, all of it. So, you know, when we shut down Times Square, when all these things happened, it was just when you couldn't go anywhere is when it really kind of hit us. And some of us took it better than others. Others really kind of became more of like a recluse,
right?
And kind of ducked back in their shell.
And how do you know how you're going to act until it's happening?
Exactly. When you're in it, you don't really know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it and ran with it. And then, unfortunately, shortly after, I took it the wrong direction.
Yeah.
You know, because I kind of lost my identity. I kind of lost myself, you know?
Well, let's talk about that because, yeah, everyone handles fame in a different way. I always say I'm so happy that I was in a group instead of solo because at least in a group, we had amazing family members around us, right? Like we were very tight with our family, which I think kept us very down to earth. Mm. I had four other best friends that would just slap you across the face if you did anything stupid.
Oh, yeah.
But then some of us go off and, you know, do some stupid things. And, you know, with you and, you know, that's when your addiction started.
Mm-hmm.
How did that start? Well, do you remember the first time you had a drink?
The first time I actually had a drink, I was probably about 18. I had a beer with this girl I was dating and I hated it. I thought it was the most,
it does taste like piss.
It tastes like piss. Yeah. I was like, this is not that I know what piss tastes like. Just clarify that real quick. But it was just gross. And it was like flat water or like flat, whatever soda. But, like my first real drink, I don't even know why, but we were at an after party or like an end of tour party. And I was always the guy that would hang out with our crew or our band. I knew everyone's first and last name. I knew their families. I said hi to everybody in the crew every day that we showed up for a show. That's just the person I am. you know, some of the boys may have known a few people, but I made it a point to make myself known. I want to know everybody. Yeah. Because they're the heart and soul of any tour. They're the ones that put the show together. And one of the guys handed me a shot, and I tried to drink it, and it was the most disgusting thing I've ever tried in my life, and it was Sambuca.
Oh, and that licorice tasted.
Yeah. Then I went back for another one, and I was like, oh, okay. I kind of like this little burning sensation. So Sambuca was my first drink of choice, and then I got alcohol poisoning, and that then moved to whiskey, and then Jack was my demise. Yeah. Jack's the one that ended me up in rehab for the first time.
Yeah.
Then Jack led to drugs.
Yeah.
Which wasn't too far
and
after
it,
that.
It is crazy because, you know, I said on the last episode, you know, I drank a lot at that age just because I was trying to hide something, right? To numb something. And I feel like I'm just the type of person that might not have that, that addiction just doesn't really stick to me because I could go weeks without drinking if I wanted to.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I was a late bloomer for sure. Like I didn't, you know, I had friends, you know, going out when they're 21, getting annihilated. Mm. I didn't really pick up a drink till I was about 25. Yeah. Like really drink.
Was there something you were trying to hide and numb at that age?
I think for me, you know, I'm just now at 45 kind of in this, I've been sober now for about almost 16 months, 17 months now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And this is the first time that I'm finally on this true trip of self-discovery. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning now what set these things off, whether it was abandonment issues from my dad leaving or, you know, for me, even though people know me as this outgoing, flamboyant, fun guy, I've got very low self-esteem. Like I'm really an introvert and I do all those things in my mind. I think it's making me feel like I'm better then. But when I finally get to a place where I know I'm no better and no worse than the person next to me, and when I get to a place that I can honestly, truly love myself and believe that I have worth, well, I finally have gotten to the place that I've been trying to get to for the last, I don't know, 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a daily thing. But I am learning a lot more about myself today because I'm taking the time to do it.
Yeah.
I'm doing the writing. I'm doing my 12 steps that I'm supposed to do in AA. And I'm finally, it's really painful because normally around this time, the pain that I'm in currently, I would pick up a drink because I don't want to feel that pain.
What do you put it into now? Because, I mean, I just see the motivation with you now. You are in the best shape of your life,
it looks like.
So, I mean, what are you putting that into? Is it just...
I'm putting it into health. I'm putting it into my kids. I'm putting it into my family. But most importantly, I'm putting it into myself. Like, I'm wearing all my emotions on my sleeve now. And if something comes up, and I don't like the way I feel, I call my sponsor, I talk to my family, I talk to my friends, and I just talk about it. As opposed to me holding it inside and just trying to handle it on my own, it's okay to ask for help. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. I try to do it. My ego told me, you got this. You could do this on your own. You don't need help. You don't need a 12-step program. You don't need a sponsor. You don't need to talk to your family. Don't burden anybody else with your BS. But it's not burdening anyone. It's just having an outlet to talk about it.
Yeah. How does your wife, Rochelle, how did she deal with that? I mean, she obviously knew what you were going through.
Yeah, she, you know, she, at the beginning of our relationship 13 years ago, she thought the drugs and the drinking was like a casual thing. Mm-hmm. She, you know, I mean, hell, I did blow in front of her. Mm-hmm. But she thought it was just a casual thing. Yeah. Oh, you know, he does this once in a while. Mm-hmm. Then she started to see it's, okay, this is now Monday through Sunday. Now it's sometimes multiple times a day. And, you know, I put her through the ringer, you know, and she deserves every award known to man, both as a wife and as a mother and as just a human being to put up with my shit. But, you know, honestly, she ended up going to Al-Anon, which is basically AA for normies. They put you through the same 12-step program that we go through, except you don't have a drug or drinking problem.
Just to understand.
But to really understand what goes on in my cuckoo mind, because my mind is pretty cuckoo. Yeah. But, you know, we've really come to a place of understanding that, you know, she gets that relapse is part of the deal. Now, for me, relapse is off the table because I don't have another one in me. The fentanyl crisis is terrifying. I literally deleted every single one of my dealer's numbers out of my phone, which means if I wanted to get drugs, I'd have to go to some rando at a bar or club, and you don't know what you're getting. Yeah,
that's dangerous.
And that could be the end of me, you know? And I'm not going to leave my kids fatherless or my wife a widow because of something as frivolous as that. Yeah. So
I remember we didn't even know each other that well, but I want to say it was the time when you did the call.
Yep.
Because we were staying at the L'Hermitage. We just happened to be staying at the same hotel. And I remember you saw me or something. You're like, hey, come in here. And it was in the theater of the L'Hermitage, right? They had this like little theater you could screen things. And it was just you in there drinking by yourself. I think probably straight Jack Daniels. Yep. And you're like, come in here. So I went in there and you showed me the video and you were kind of incoherent.
Yeah.
Then. And I was like, oh my God. It was the first time that I realized, oh my gosh, AJ has a problem.
Yeah.
And it just really, it was the first time I ever seen anyone that I would consider like an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah.
And never knew what that looked like. And I remember just feeling like, oh my God, I hope someone has your back. Do people know that you have this problem? So well, I don't know if you remember that.
I kept it in the closet for as long as I could until it finally started to affect my job, my day-to-day life. You know, the boys were oblivious because I still showed up on time. I still did my job.
You were a functioning alcoholic.
I was a functioning alcoholic.
Yeah.
Until I wasn't functioning. You know, I was still living in Phillips Landing back in Orlando. And when we were in rehearsals for the Black and Blue tour, and I called in sick. I wasn't sick. I was just hungover and in like what they call a coke coma. Like I hadn't been to bed in days. And the boys finally started to kind of catch on a little bit that this was more than just drinking. They broke into my house. They went to my kitchen. I had a wok. I don't even know why I had a wok. I never cooked in my house, but I had a wok. And they filled it with ice water and they dumped it on my head.
Wow.
And woke me up. I was pissed as hell. I told them I was going to call the cops for breaking into my house, get the hell out of my house. Showed up to rehearsal later that day. We all discussed it. Water under the bridge. Then I knew that it was that I was crossing a personal line when I finally started drinking on stage. The second to last song of our show, because the encore was Shape of My Heart, because that was the single off. That was the big single off Black and Blue. We would do the call and then go into Shape of My Heart. And our percussion player would have these two red solo cups sitting at his rig. One was water, one was straight Jack. So I did this whole shtick where it's a fake phone call and I'm talking to the girl and like the intro of the song. And I'd be like, hey, is it you calling me? And I'd look at my band. And then I'd go and I would be like, oh, I'm like parched. And I would just chug that son of a bitch. And it wouldn't really hit me till like the end of the show that I'm like, oh, okay. And then by then I'm back in the hotel room. But that's when it was like, okay, dude. And I would tell myself this, like, what are you doing? You're drinking on stage.
Did you ever feel like you would be kicked out of the band at any point?
No, but yes. You know, I was kind of high and mighty at that time. And the boys flew out a therapist that I never used to be on the road. Then they would do random drug testing with me. And as a true addict, I tried to BS my way out of my drug test by paying off one of the local crew guys to piss in a cup. So I do it. And then I literally, this is the extent that I went to. I put it in a bag. This guy's pee. Random guy. Put it in a bag. Fancied a little hose that I could get because our tour manager had to watch me pee, right? So I had the hose come down my long sleeve into my hand, and I stood at the freaking urinal, and I just unpinched it, and then it peed. So cut to, drug test results come back. There's like seven drugs. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay. This isn't my pee. This is not my pee. I lied. I'm sorry. The only drug I have is cocaine and some alcohol. I didn't do whatever the hell else is in this guy's body.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, maybe not do a local, like,
road crew. Yeah, no. So, but, you know, so then it kind of came to the... So then the kind of precipice was we were supposed to throw the first pitch out at... I think it was the first game of the season, Major League Baseball, Boston Red Sox game.
How do five of you throw a first pitch?
Well, it wouldn't have been me, that's for sure. But so the night before we had a show, management sat us down in the dressing room and said, hey, I know it's y'all's day off, but can y'all do this? Are you guys in? And we all five said, sure. So I did agree. Cut to, went out that night, didn't go to bed. Talked to my tour manager that raised next morning and said, I'm out, I'm not doing it. And he's like, look, you need to talk to your bandmates. I can't let you make that call. I'm like, well, I'm telling you, I'm not going. So I told Kevin, he was pissed off, and he came to try to get in my room. I double-bolted everything. He broke down the door to the hotel room, but he couldn't get into the master bedroom. That had a double bolt. Mm-hmm. We exchanged some words, and the last thing he said to me was, I don't trust you. You're dead to me. Mm. And he left. I called my security to the room. I called our manager to the room, and I said, I quit.
Really?
I quit. I don't deserve this. Mm. I'm not going to put up with this. They're crazy. I'm done. And the therapist finally shows up and she's like, look, this is your options. I don't think quitting the group is the answer, but I think you need help. So I'm suggesting, and I've already made a phone call, they have a bed waiting for you at Sierra Tucson in Tucson, Arizona. It's a treatment center. And I was like, well, can I go home first? I wanted to see my mom. And she's like, well, you can, but I suggest against it because moms with addicts that are new to this, they want to be mom.
Yeah.
They want to fix you. Mm-hmm. She's not going to be able to fix you. Only you can fix you with the proper help. And so I went door to door. I left from Boston, flew straight to Arizona. And that was my first time in treatment. That was July 9th, 2001.
Hey, L.A., Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. From epic shopping to nonstop pride events, DiscoverLA.com is your gateway to everything L.A. From walk-up windows and rooftop bars to year-round alfresco dining, Los Angeles is a culinary thrill ride sure to leave visitors hungry for more. From tacos to sushi, we truly have some of the best restaurants. After you get a bite to eat, get a taste for fame firsthand by attending a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard or glimpse behind the scenes at World Famous Studio Tour. Stop and see a movie at the iconic El Capitan Theater and check out the stairs outside the Dolby Theater where all the stars walk before the Oscars. Take a hike at glamorous Griffith or stop for a boba or a draft cold brew at an outdoor cafe perfect for people watching. There are endless amounts of outdoor activities in L.A. with our beautiful weather. And, of course, Pride is celebrated every day in Los Angeles. Everyone is welcome to experience our sparkling nightlife, indulgent spas, and sensational shopping. Plan your weekend at DiscoverLA.com. It's time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring?
but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Is there, I mean, you know, Kevin breaking the door down, you know, as, you know, a recovering addict, is there a way it should have been approached to you that would have been better? Or are you just happy that anything like that happened?
Because no, this is a good frosted 100%, tip. 100%, it was exactly the way that it should have transpired. Okay. The boys did not know how to deal with
an addict. Right, I mean, who
does? Yeah. You don't know the extent of how bad it is, but they had seen the progression up to that point, and I think Kevin was probably the most hip to it, and just it was the straw that broke the camel's back at that point. Yeah. And I think it was more fear-based than anger from him. I think he was terrified that I was going to wind up dead. Mm-hmm. So it was from a loving place.
Right.
And, you know, Kevin and Brian actually came to visit me in treatment, and, you know, we had talked about, How do we work the tour? How do we finish the tour? What do we do? And it just so happened that Nick had just broken his hand. So we had to take the tour down. And the boys went on to TRL the very next day. They flew out to New York, and they said that, you know, our brother's going to treatment. And to this day, I've never watched that episode.
Really?
I've never seen it. All I know is from what I've heard is that it's a tear fest. The fans were all hysterical. People were genuinely concerned.
Yeah.
You know, the boys were all teary eyed, and, you know, this is their brother.
But I guess everyone is different in how they would like to be approached. But do you have any tips out there for someone listening that has a family member, a friend that they just know has a problem with alcohol,
yeah,
drugs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, at the end of the day, if you have a friend, if you have a loved one, if you have someone that you know is struggling, sit them down and just say, hey, talk to me. I see you're hurting. Something is off. Something is bothering you. Talk to me. And if they want to, they will. If they don't, they don't. But don't make it about yourself. Don't make it that you're better than or that you know they have a problem. Don't approach it that way. You've got to be inviting. You've got to be patient, and you got to be understanding.
Yeah.
Yes, it's mm-hmm. got to be a safe place. You can't come in, you know, guns blazing, like, you're a drunk. I know you are.
Yeah.
Quit
yeah.
that, you know. No,
you get defensive.
You, can't.
Yeah. you get defensive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the claws come out. You get pinned in a corner. That's how I was. I felt attacked, even though I was desperate for help. Mm-hmm. I wanted help, but I didn't know how to ask for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
It's different for everybody, but look, thank God today, finally, the mental health crisis is not tucked under the rug anymore.
Yes,
it is now up on the, it's mm-hmm. up on the rooftop screaming out, this is a thing. Mm-hmm. It is an epidemic. It yeah. is affecting millions and millions of people across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's depression, anxiety, yeah. drugs, alcohol.
And it's harder to see because yeah. you're not falling down some steps or slurring. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I mean, I, you know, without getting emotional about it, you know, I will go to, I'm sure, our mutual friend Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that it still kills me to mm-hmm. this day. You know, I've sobbed about it mm-hmm. because when you know someone that well and you just, we as addicts, we as people that are suffering from any kind of mental health, depression, anxiety, we are the best at hiding it. Yeah. We can keep it under wraps. We deserve like the Oscar of Oscars mm-hmm. because if we don't want you to know, you're never going to know mm-hmm. until we get sloppy.
Yeah.
Then everybody knows. Like you see me at the L'Hermitage, I obviously got sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it. Didn't really know how to react.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but again, this is a thing that is affecting everybody, whether it's affecting you directly, or you know someone that is suffering from a mental health concern.
Yeah.
You know, but again, I'm glad it's not under the freaking rug anymore.
100%. And I mean, this week, you know, we're going to be working with On Our Sleeves, which is an amazing organization to tackle children's mental health.
Yes. Look, here's the thing about that is that you're a parent, I'm a parent. Mm-hmm. Everything starts at home. Oh, yeah. I believe that 1,000,000,000%. Yeah. How you raise your kids will set them up for, as well as their teachers, people that they idolize, that they respect. That is going to set them up for either failure 100%. Or set them up for success. And in more ways than one, I'm so glad that I am an addict so that I could share with my kids the horror stories of what I've been through and hopefully put the fear of God in them. Now, look, they're going to take their own path, and I will support them, whatever that is. And I will be there to catch them when they fall. That's what a good father does. Mm-hmm. But if I could help them dodge a couple bullets along the way, I'm going to do whatever I can.
Yeah.
I'm a helicopter dad. There's nothing wrong with that. I am going to admit that right now. Yeah. Like, even being in an open field, I'm like, stop running.
Yeah.
Please don't run.
But how can you not?
Stop
running. You just want to protect your kids at all costs.
But I'm so bad. I'm so bad. And you know, kids are resilient. Like, if they fall off the couch, it's a scrape. If we fall off the couch, we're in the hospital for like a week and we broke our hip.
No shit, yeah.
It's like, God.
Now, when this airs, the Songs for Tomorrow would have already happened, you know, last Wednesday. You know, Aaron Carter, obviously, was very close with you. I'm sure felt like your own little brother.
Yep.
What would you like to come out of a tragedy like this? You know, what conversation should we be having?
I think the conversation that should be being had is, again, kind of piggybacking on what you were saying. If you know someone is hurting and you can see it plain as day, say something.
Yeah.
Don't stay mute about it. Even if they fight you on it, at least it gives them an opportunity to see that there's someone there that actually sees them, that cares about them. Now, whether they accept the help or not, who knows? I mean, he reached out to me years back and asked for help. And I willingly was like, okay, this is what I suggest you do. You need to fly out here. You need to go to this treatment center that I called. I've got it all set up for you. And he wasn't going to come. He did. Got a car service for him. He got to the treatment center. He checked in. He told them, I don't want anyone to be able to contact me except for him. And 2 days later, he checked himself out.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 days after that, put me on blast all over Twitter, saying that I was doing it to glorify myself, which is not true.
They always lash out like that.
But that's what addicts do. Yeah. If we're not ready to get sober, it's you. You're the fault.
Mm-hmm.
You're at fault. It's you. It's not me. You're the problem. Da 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 da. You know, can I say that I'm shocked? No, sadly. Did any of us want this? Hell no. It's just tragic. It's tragic.
Well, you feel helpless because, you know, I got close with him. I hosted a tour, you know, a couple of years ago. He was on that tour and it seemed like he was doing so well, right?
There was a long stint where he was doing really well.
And then like halfway through the tour, you could tell like, okay, he's definitely huffing again. And, you know, there's just something wrong. He kept coming to me because of the Lou Pearlman documentary. He's like, I want to do a doc about my addiction and all this. So I was like, wow, that's so great that he wants to expose that. And I thought that would be so great for him to reflect on what he's been through and kind of see it like, oh my gosh. Because in the documentary that we did, he wasn't in his right mind. Like that was the first time I ever saw him and said, oh, he has a major problem right now. And we all tried to do whatever we could. But like you said, unless you
want it, you're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've even seen buddies of mine that were court ordered. And they still can't get it. I mean, it's some people have to lose everything or unfortunately lose their own life, which as horrible as it is to say, hopefully helps another life, you know, to not go to that point. You know, that's in the 12-step program that I'm in. That's what the final step is being of service, helping other alcoholics, helping other addicts, and just being of service, being a stand-up member of society.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not the smartest, sharpest tack in the freaking shed. I get that. That's fine. But if my life experiences can be shared with another human being, there's going to be some kind of mirrored effect mm-hmm. between me and any other addict. We've all been through the same shit,
yeah.
period. Just different levels of it.
Mm-hmm.
If I can help another addict by sharing my story and walking them through the same program that I'm being walked through, then great.
Yeah.
You know, but again, you have to be willing to want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, some people like, you know, Jordan, mm-hmm. you know, quit cold turkey.
Yeah.
Just cold turkey. Never been to a meeting, never done anything, just quit cold turkey. And he's been sober for God knows how many years now. Mm-hmm. You know, that is, for some people, that works. For me, no. I need structure
mm-hmm.
to help facilitate, to help me find me.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so great. I love that you talk about this. I know people listening right now are, you know, really relating.
Okay, so let's just hold right here, actually. This looks like it's going to be a two-parter. So we will come back and release part two this week.
Yeah, we're going long. All right, so we have so much to talk about still. We'll see you for part two in a couple of days. Hey, thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram at Frosted Tips with Lance.
And Michael Turzanar.
And at Lance Bass for all your pop culture needs.
And make sure to write us a review and leave us 5 stars, 6 if you can. See you next time.
Hey LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. Immerse yourself in our vibrant fashion scene where exclusive streetwear meets high-end boutiques. Stroll through styles defining our bold, wildly creative city, like the unique finds at Melrose Trading Post, a real LA gem. Explore star-studded experiences on Hollywood Boulevard, behind-the-scenes studio tours, and moments of awe under our legendary blue sky. Picture this. The iconic Griffith Observatory, inspiring directors worldwide. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's the time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, zatting off.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.